Welcome along. So the 2022 World Cup is over and Lionel Messi is the champion. It's such a relief to know that he's good at football after all. I was beginning to doubt myself. All those goals, assists and superhuman performances, well, they were one thing. But unlike Stefan Gyvars and Fernando Llorente, he'd never won a month-long tournament with five potential winners getting knocked out on penalties. Never again will we have to hear the words, "Yeah, but Messi's never won the World Cup." The World Cup is great, but it is a bit random. If they started it all again tomorrow, and no, Mr. Infantino, that is not a request, then could Brazil win it? Could Spain win it? Part of the reason for loving the World Cup is its simplicity. The combination of fine margins and high stakes brings an excitement that we miss from club football. That and the fact that you can't just go out and buy all the best Morocco players, which is exactly what would happen if a team that you didn't expect got to the Champions League semi-finals. The Qatar World Cup was great on the pitch, because World Cups are great, which is why they were prepared to go to such lengths to buy it. And I'll let you into a secret. Whatever you thought the political situation was before, in terms of migrant worker rights, LGBT, women's rights, it's all the same now. The Football World Cup does not shape the politics, it's the other way around. It is a reflection of what is happening in the world. Terry Gibson is here to give us his analysis of the football, which will include why a suspicious number of Atletico Madrid players did so well. And we'll also have to discuss, Terry, whether Lionel Scaloni, whether a manager, actually, you know, we analyse an awful lot, don't we, about managers. Never convinced that they make as much difference as we think. And the Patreons have been in touch with some questions. Thank you, Patreon. Patreon.com/LTEL. We're back in La Liga very soon. Lex says, "Hey, fellas, is it just me or Scaloni's defensive substitutions gave the game away twice? Bringing on Acuna and Petzetta for attacking players had the exact opposite of the desired effect. They made the same mistake in the Netherlands game. Overall, Argentina deserved to win, but they did their best to give it away."
Just a bit.
Yes.
I think the change for Di Maria for Acuna was historically one of the worst substitutions in the history of the World Cup. It really was, because, I mean, I'm wrong. Acuna is a good, steady, decent left-back who can get forward, and he's aggressive and he hustles and bustles, and I can see what Scaloni thinks he might give to the team that's got a two-goal advantage. But they just lost all momentum going forward, and he wasn't there to... In the position he played and came on, he was not going to add anything to Messi and Alvarez. There was no link-up play from that point on. He was hoofing crosses into the penalty area with Messi and Alvarez, not going to get on the end of them. Half of them went beyond the goal. There was no cohesion with any link-up play. So, therefore, that gave the momentum back to France. And it appeared, 80 minutes in, that France weren't going to be in a position to capitalise on being invited back into the game until Otamendi makes a horrendous mistake. I think something that has to be said about this World Cup is, I don't want to be a damp squib on what's been a fantastic tournament, but the levels of defending have been absolutely diabolical. And I have to be honest, we've received no analysis on that subject during this World Cup. Everyone's ignored it. You know, the narrative has been about so much about how this is going to be a great World Cup, despite it being where it was. We've ignored the basic fundamentals of football and analysis, and just ignored the fact that defenders now think it's okay to start crashing into people and raising your arms in the penalty box and giving away penalties. I mean, you just look at the France game, France against England. That was the same. You know, they were just crashing into, and the Hernandez foul on Mason Mount, and the amount of fouls they gave away on the edge of the box and in the penalty box. And Otamendi yesterday makes one mistake, lets the ball bounce, and he thinks he's going to deal with it. Then it's almost a feel like it's an affront to your being macho, that once a defender gets beaten, I'm going to bring you down.
Yeah,
even though it's in the penalty box, you're not going to get past me, even if it's in the penalty box. He could make the case for Dembele as well. Keep yourself out of the way. Still so much work to do on both those instances. So much work on Di Maria had to do to get away from Dembele and cause a problem. It was Di Maria, wasn't it? So much happened in the game. And then the same for the Otamendi penalty. There's still so much. It was a half chance at best. He could still apply pressure without crashing into him and bringing him down. Hope that Martinez makes a save from the attempt. And then even Montiel's handball. It's utterly ridiculous. It's a 20-yard shot from an angle. you run out with your arms up in the air and away from your body and block it. And I was incredulous at that. Is that a penalty? Mm. Was he giving away a penalty for blocking a shot in that manner in the World Cup final when you're 3-2 up? And we didn't receive any analysis about that. And maybe it's one of the reasons why Morocco performed so well in this tournament.
Yeah,
that they defended well.
Yeah.
So I've loved the fact that we've seen a lot of goals and a lot of drama, and the World Cup final itself is easily the best World Cup final ever. Not just because it had six goals and a penalty shootout, because it had Messi and Mbappe, two of the great players in the world, the star billing and lived up to that star billing. But it was just the drama of France coming back from, they were dead and buried. And you have to give credit to them all the way through the tournament, some drastic choices from Didier Deschamps to make changes, brutal changes in the fact that he took two off in the first half. Griezmann coming off early in the second half and he's had a fantastic tournament. That was a big call. And you can argue it worked, but for 80 minutes it weren't working. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden out of the blue, Otamendi makes a mistake, and Mbappe 90 seconds later, a moment of brilliance, and the game is turned on its head. So for all those reasons, that's why it was the best World Cup final ever. For Mbappe to score a hat-trick and another penalty and not win the final. And, the whole narrative about this World Cup was, could Messi, shake off that burden of not being a Maradona and not winning a World Cup? And it was losing the first game and being under pressure in the group stages. It was a stunning entry. Well, it's been a really, really good World Cup tournament.
Just on the subject of Scaloni being a genius manager now, I've got to mention the Dybala substitution. It is an awful idea to bring a player on to take a penalty. As Spain could tell you with Sarabia, it's a terrible decision. I think the hit rate of that guy scoring, normally people score 75% of penalties, I think, go in. What is it for guys who've just come on the pitch a minute or 2 minutes earlier?
You'll have to find out.
It's like 5% or 10% hit rate or something. And that was an awful penalty.
He got away with that.
Down the middle, didn't he? Yeah. Honestly, Lloris should have just kicked it away.
The commentary I heard, and I was flicking between the two, was, what nerve to take a penalty like that? What? He just scuffed it down the middle, and he was so lucky that Lloris dived, because it had no power, it had no height. I mean, but he got away with it. And Argentina got away with it in general. And then Montiel, an unlikely World Cup hero, who himself, when he scored, felt like an unlikely World Cup hero, didn't he? Because he scored and you thought, for a split second, I thought, that's funny.
Yeah.
And then the shirt came off and he just broke down. But it looked almost like that. I can't imagine what it's like to take a penalty in those circumstances. Although, to be fair to Montiel, there was still another opportunity to win it.
Yeah.
So the pressure is slightly off, but he took a good penalty. But for Sevilla's maybe second choice right back behind Jesus Navas to be the winning goal scorer in a dramatic final like that, pretty much summed that game up. But Scaloni, you're right. I mean, to bring on Dybala, as I said, even Montiel came on for Molina. I thought that was a weird one as well, because Molina has been really good in this tournament. You mentioned about the Atletico Madrid players. He's been really good, and he didn't look tired. I don't know if there was an injury issue or not, but that was, I'm looking at it and thinking, why have you just made those changes? The two, you could, change your right back for another right back, and you brought Acuna on for Di Maria. There were other areas of the pitch that did need freshening up, clearly, and he didn't do that until extra time. So that was a strange one. But, I mean, Scaloni it's an incredible story. I mean, he's famous in La Liga. He's part of the Depor team that won the La Liga title, and then he's had no other club job and ends up on the backroom staff. I love the fact he's got Walter Samuel and Pablo Aimar alongside him. The players will respect that. And there he is with, having that, which isn't easy for a manager, of managing someone like Lionel Messi, with the expectations that come with it. And somehow it's all aligned, and him and Messi have linked up perfectly well. Copa America as well, we shouldn't forget that. And now the World Cup final. And where do you go after that? Where do you go after that as Messi? Yeah, I've seen Messi state that he wants to carry on playing for Argentina.
Good,
as a champion.
Yeah, I agree with that. And he hasn't got that long left, has he? So you might as well play a few more games, try another Copa There's always the temptation to sort of, you know, drop the World Cup and walk off the stage, isn't there?
Come on. Something that's in the it's a subject at the moment, isn't it, about players choosing when to bow out, their legacy. I think, and some are getting it right, some get it right, some get it right, some get it completely wrong, and you have to be. I mean, is it going to get any better than that? It's not going to get any better for Messi unless he defends the World Cup.
But he's not.
He defends the Copa America.
Yeah, but you don't have to go out.
35.
You don't have to go out at the top, though. You can go as long as you're declined, because it's not the player he was.
If they don't win the Copa America, he'll still get criticised. Yeah, you should have gone.
But
you've got the ump because you're not starting and you're on the bench.
That will only be at that moment. So if they lose, say they lose to Peru in the semi-finals or something, they'll get hammered at that moment. In the long run, he'll be remembered for all the great things. In the long run, you get a good write-up. You just got to try and have a slightly dignified exit, which doesn't mean, for me, it doesn't mean you have to go out at the top. Just don't be... like Ronaldo, I think, is, unfortunately, it is undignified the way he's carried on recently, which is a shame, because he has been one of the
bizarre, isn't it? Doing what he did before the World Cup, so he burnt all his bridges at Manchester United, which is still one of the biggest clubs in the world. And he burnt his bridges there in a manner that wasn't befitting of an absolute genuine superstar of football. He now finds himself without a club. His performances were probably going to suffer because of that interview he gave before the World Cup, because he placed... Ronaldo already has so much pressure on him in everything he does.
Yeah.
And yet to add to it, going into the World Cup with that interview with Piers Morgan, I couldn't even bring myself to say that bloke's name. Because I don't get where Ronaldo thought that Piers Morgan had any credibility in the world in terms of being a football broadcaster, journalism, any type of... Yeah. Why of all the people in the world to give that interview to? In any language in the world, why would you pick Piers Morgan?
Yeah.
And he did.
Ronaldo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just snowballed from there, and it affected his performances, and Portugal were better with him not in the team, and all the stuff that will go, that follows him around. So it's so important. Such a shame that you have that ability, because you have all the money you're going to need for the rest of your life, your kids' life, grandkids' life, their kids and grandkids probably. So you're not doing it for the money. You've got to know when to protect that legacy and step out of the top. And that's what Messi has to face now. I mean, I don't want him to pack up. I think at 35, he's still clearly shown him that he's still got enough in the locker to provide us with a lot of joy over the next few years. But there's a delicate one on when to call it a day with the national. Busquets would be another one, I think, that falls.
But he's
into
gone,
that
hasn't
category.
Fact,
maybe. Yeah, but I think a year too late.
Yeah, right. I see what you mean. Yeah, can I give you this? Actually, Kelvin's asked us a question. He says, right, I hope you're both well. What's your reaction to Sergio Busquets' international retirement? He wasn't at his best at the World Cup, but there's no denying he has been the best holding midfielder of his profile, of his generation. Rodri is the main candidate to replace him. For me, Zubimendi should be considered, because he's a fantastic young player who understands the role. And then he gives us his team of the tournament. We'll have a look at some of the teams of the tournament later. But yeah, so yeah.
Who was that from, John?
Kelvin.
Kelvin. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Busquets is the best position, the best player in that position ever, in my opinion, because he defined a new role in the team. When Pep took over at Barcelona, he came from the B team. And I've really studied Busquets over the years in terms of watching him understand the awareness of defensive situations, three or four passes before he steps in and anticipates a pass that he knew was going to happen 30, 40 seconds before. And in terms of if it's on the left, he can see, but if you watch Busquets out of play and you're not focusing on the ball and you're not focusing on who's in possession, you can see him putting himself in a position, guessing, anticipating where the next two or three passes are going to be played, and he'll be in position to anticipate at the right time. He's brilliant in receiving the ball out the back, and he's brilliant in stepping into between the two centre-backs when he was younger and coming out the back with the ball. His range of passing in the attacking half of the pitch was underestimated as well. I couldn't agree more. I think he's defined a new position. It used to be the McAlealy role, it's now the Busquets role. That's what it's going to be called. And Busquets added something different to the McAlealy role. And he wasn't just a stopper. You know, he could play. And I just felt it was a shame that seeing him in the last year or two, I have to be honest, it's quite surprising because he's never relied on pace. And you often find those players can go longer. But somehow his lack of pace has become a problem for Barcelona and for Spain. And I think just this World Cup was one too far. And I think he's going to leave Barcelona at the end of the year. So it's that timing of when you could have left. Iniesta did it right. This beard went off to Japan, retired at the right time. Xavi did it when he left. Now, there are players that do it at the right time, that walk out and the club with the fanfare of being the legend they are. And Zidane did it in style, didn't they?
No one ever does it better than that, do they?
No. And, you know, these players that we're talking about don't need to hang on for another year, for another year's wages and stuff. They have the freedom, the choice to decide when to step out. And unfortunately, it's like boxers. Some of them go on too long. You know, they always think there's another championship, there's another fight there, or another two or three fights. And, you know, some of them don't get it right. And professional sportsmen, women can be addictive. And you don't want to give it up. No one wants to tell you when you're a superstar to give it up.
But I sort of agree with that. It's different for boxers because obviously there's the safety element involved as well. Yeah. But for a footballer, there isn't. So I sometimes think they give up too early. Because Modric, for example, when they got to the World Cup final 3-4 years ago, it would have been perfectly legitimate for Luka Modric at 33 to say, that's it, never going to get any better, I'm off. But look at what he's achieved.
Yeah. I think it comes down to your current condition.
Yeah.
So it's not just a number, but it's not just the age and the number. It's your current condition. How do you feel when you wake up after you've played a game? Do you need 2, 3, 4 days? Are you tired? Are you stiff? You can't recover in time for the next one. If you can keep doing that, then you know it isn't just a number. It's it has to be you're at the same level. You don't want that reputation to be damaged by not being the Luka Modric we've always become accustomed to seeing. You don't want to be like Ronaldo. Become accustomed to seeing.
Ronaldo, I don't know. Because if Ronaldo played the role that he should play, he should have been happy as a sub. And then would have all said, 37, he's brilliant as a sub. He comes off the bench and he grabs a goal here and there. It's only because he sort of refuses to accept the passing of the time. Because Iniesta has played on in Japan, and I haven't watched him in Japan, but I think what else could he be doing? What is there better to do than go and play football in Japan or somewhere? You just accept that you're not the player that you were. But for some reason, we have an issue that we sort of think that they're ruining the legacy. I don't get that they're ruining the legacy as long as they played the role appropriate to their ability now.
And which for Busquets, some find it hard to do, don't they?
See, for Busquets, my only issue with Busquets is that he can't play at the level that he used to. And okay, there is an issue in terms of going down through. I don't know where you go down and find your level when you've been as like a fine-tuned player like Busquets was. It's hard to go down and play. I don't know where you do that role. That's the problem.
Well, it took about him going to Inter Miami.
Yeah.
And that's going to be tough. If you've watched any of the MLS, that's a full-blooded young person's game.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It may well sound cushy, go and live in Miami for a couple of years and play the Busquets role there, but that's going to be tough for him to do that. I get why he would do that. Of course we do. But it'd be interesting to see how that worked. But also, I think I have to mention it, and it's I'm getting things off my chest.
Go on.
Can't we start acting a little bit more mature in terms of the analysis and the narrative around who's the GOAT, for God's sake? I mean, even the GOAT sounds of immaturity, doesn't it? They've come up with an abbreviation for the greatest of all time, and it is impossible to label anyone. We can all have our opinions, but there is no certificate that comes with, this is official now.
Yeah, yeah.
With Messi winning the World Cup, my view hasn't changed on Messi at all from him winning the World Cup. I think it's great for him. It tops off a career that he's glittering.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't have thought any different.
Yeah. If Hugo Lloris had saved a couple of penalties, he wouldn't have won the World Cup, would he? Or, you know, so, yeah.
And Woods, people who said, oh, he's Maradona or Pele or this. And they are all greats. They really are. Messi is along with them. Why do we have to choose? You feel almost like now you have to choose one.
Yeah.
Out of, particularly Messi and Ronaldo. They're the current ones. You have to choose one. I don't want to choose one. You know, I don't feel the need. I don't want to feel pressurized into, say, Pele.
Yeah.
Brazilian Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, Zidane, Cruyff, all of these.
If you allow me one level of a little bit of analysis, I would say the way the modern game is set up has allowed Messi to have a career that Maradona wasn't able to have.
Totally.
And so he's got that long, long list of, you know, success over that long period of time. Maradona couldn't do that, partly because of Maradona's personality, but partly because the game was a brutality about the game in those days that it was a different time, wasn't it? And when Pele, people trash Pele, and it's ludicrous because he had a massively long career. He won 3 World Cups. If you look at him, go back and look at him. It was amazing. And the other thing about Pele, the testimony of his peers. So Cruyff, Beckenbauer, Bobby Charlton, all those blokes all said Pele was the greatest. That'll do. You know,
exactly. Exactly. So it's foolish for us to have to, like, we have to pick a team. I don't want to feel pressurized into picking anyone. There is I've always said a table, top table, and Messi's on it. All those other greats are on it. And the football laws of the game have changed completely. The facilities of the game have changed completely from back in the day when Pele was winning the World Cup in 1958. You know, the state of the pitches, the equipment that's used, the law changes. It's impossible. But when Messi's body of work is insurmountable. No one's ever going to beat that. I mean, I was looking at his stats this morning because it's almost like in this World Cup, people have suddenly thought, he's quite good, isn't he? And, you know, the pundits have gone over the top on him in some games when I think he's been okay and come up with a bit of magic here and there.
Mm.
And he's had a brilliant World Cup for a 35-year-old and the pressure that's on him, it's astonishing. There can't be a bigger fan than Lionel Messi than me. But it's almost like the pundits have suddenly come to the realisation, this Messi guy's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I look back at his stats. He got 70-odd goals one year, 60-odd the next year, and another 16 in the same two seasons for Argentina. So you're talking about 150 goals in two seasons for club and country. And since Pep took over Barcelona in 2008-09, that run of goal scoring for a player who predominantly wasn't a striker. So it's astonishing. And it's the body of work, isn't it, which compares favourably to any other of those greats, maybe apart from Pele. But you look at the body of work over, 19 years, I think, with Barcelona and PSG. It's astonishing, you know, to have that ability to play as good as he does, but to the ability to play as many matches as he does. I mean, at 35, to go for a grueling World Cup like this without any hint of being injured or a knock or playing under stress is incredible. And that goes for Modric as well. He had a great World Cup. Yeah. So it's, you know, Messi has been incredible in this World Cup. And Mbappe showed, you know, maybe the superstar that he is, scoring a hat-trick in a World Cup final, scoring the goals, the moments of magic that he showed. Is, you know, we've still got a lot to look forward to because Messi is coming towards the end.
Spare a thought for Erling Haaland and all of this, because everyone's talking about Mbappe. Because the World Cup is so great, isn't it? Such high stakes for something that is a bit random, as I said at the start. Because now everyone's convinced, Mbappe is now the modern player. And Haaland was sitting up thinking, I'm as good as him. I play for Norway, so I'm not here.
Well, he's going to have a better chance at the next World Cup, isn't it? 200 teams in it. 50 groups of four.
And I said it's good that you're not allowed to sign players. England should be allowed to sign Erling Haaland. He's born in Leeds. You know, the guy made a mistake. You know, come and play for England.
He puts himself about, though, so that might be a problem. We wouldn't win a fair trophy, maybe. Starts getting all aggressive. One yellow card in 5 games for England.
Yeah.
It's me. I didn't realise that.
Fair play trophy winners, though, Terry. That's what it's all about, ultimately, isn't it?
That's it. Almost impossible, John. One yellow card in 5 games.
Yeah.
That was for an elbow by Harry Maguire and Griezmann in an aerial challenge in the 90th minute against France.
Right.
I'm not suggesting for one moment that Argentina did win the World Cup with 17 yellow cards in seven matches. We managed to get away with it. So no cynical fouls, which I hate, but need to be done. That was an astonishing stat from this World Cup.
Yeah. Right. Let me throw another. All right. So Spain, we discussed Spain with the Patreons, but for the wider group, let's have a. It's quite miserable discussing Spain. They're really annoying, aren't they?
Yeah.
But Nathan's point. Hi guys. Spain's disappointing results under Luis Enrique been down to selection stubbornness, not picking players on form, and playing players out of position. How does Terry think that De La Fuente will get on? And would Alguacil or Valverde have not been a sensible choice? I mean, it was done remarkably quickly, wasn't it? It was.
Yeah, but I thought Marcelino was going to get it. That was the name that was that he was. He's available. Yeah. A really good manager, really good experienced manager, and I have to say, probably what Spain need. Who has that dynamic of mixing up the possession based game with a pragmatic style of game with an end product. So, but I was surprised when they made the quick decision. There is De La Fuente. I don't know too much about him other than watching the under-21s and the Olympics. It was a very similar style to Luis Enrique. I trust and hope that he will pick a squad that will be a lot different to the one we've just witnessed. I think he should be. We talked about ageing players. Sergio Ramos has been playing well this year. He could have got. There's so many issues about that Spain squad. The choice of goalkeepers. No David De Gea in the top three Spanish goalkeepers. Utterly ridiculous. There was lots of players, and then you get players like Rodri going, who is brilliant and should have started as the holding midfielder, playing at centre-back. And then other players like Hugo Guillamon going, and I'm looking at the squad now and thinking, well, did you go as a midfield player where you play for Valencia? Or did you go as a centre-back because Luis Enrique wanted to play a midfielder as a centre-back? And if that's the case, why did Eric Garcia go? And Guillamon and neither Eric Garcia played. And you had Borja Iglesias, who could have been another striker. Iago Aspas, Canales could have gone. Mikel Merino could have gone. Zubimendi could have gone. There was so much to debate. And I have to be honest, I thought the same in the European Championships, but it proved me wrong because they had a really good European Championships. They got better, didn't they? And by the end of it, they were unlucky to lose to Italy on penalties. Yeah. And you kind of thought, well, he has this process. He's doing things his own way. You're going to have to put up with it. We're going to have to put up with it because it might just work. But it didn't work, and he paid the price. And it was almost like he was trying to do it and not only win a World Cup, but to win a World Cup under his terms so he could take all the credit for picking this unusual squad, an unusual team, and we still won it. It's all down to Luis Enrique. And I just don't think he gave the national team a good enough chance of winning it. And it was the same old Spain, lots of possession, no attempts on goal. Hard to watch. The first game against Costa Rica led us all into a false sense of, oh, they can do some.
Yeah, because Costa Rica didn't have a defensive plan of any sort, it would seem.
No. And then Costa Rica weren't as bad as that game suggested.
Mm. But that's how good Spain potentially are, though, isn't it? That's what struck me. But it's only against... They could have beaten both teams in yesterday's final. That's the reality of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
There you go.
And they might have been better playing against a team that didn't sit back like Morocco.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it was quite easy for Morocco to defend against Spain. And there was no plan B. Pass, pass, pass. Down the left, back in the middle, down the right, back in the middle, down the left, into the front, back into the middle. And you get six or seven players defending deep behind the ball and waiting to attack. A high cross delivered into the box when Spain run out of patience and you've got Marco Asensio in there, then Morocco, that plays into Morocco's hands. He wanted to win a World Cup without a centre-forward, with a midfielder playing at centre-back about 10 players in the squad he was never going to pick. That's just dumb. It's daft.
Yeah.
And there was no need to do that. I mean, there's always going to be players in the squad that don't get playing time. But there was too many in Spain squad that you think, well, he's not going to pick him. There's no need to pick him. And he's going to be of no use. And you've got 10 minutes to go and you need a goal. And, you've got four of the same player sitting on the bench. I mean, that attacking midfielders, strikers that like to play wide. You haven't got a centre forward. You've got one you didn't start and you've put him on. There's no one else to go on now.
Yeah.
You've got all these auxiliary strikers that he's left-footed, he plays on the right, he's right-footed, he plays on the left, and he likes to drop deep. And but where's your goal scorers? You look at the goal scorers that were in the squad, there's about five goals between them this season, if you take out Morata. And it was bonkers. Dani Olmo, Sarabia, Fati, Asensio. There's not loads of goals in those players.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, you could have even. I can argue a case for Hossolu going in that World Cup if it was going to be Borja Iglesias. If you just want to win a tournament, you don't have to pick someone under the age of 27 because they're not going to be available in four years' time.
Oh, you're grasping.
It doesn't. Yeah. It's exactly. You know, pick some goal scorers. And there weren't enough in the Spain squad. And it was almost like Luis Enrique wanted to do it, not only win a World Cup, but do it on his own terms.
Yeah.
To maybe prove that he was this incredible coach. I mean, Scaloni's going to be called an incredible coach. And he did it by pretty sensible management, to be honest. And used most of the players in his squad.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the players that came on and the players that played in the squad and played in the other games. You could argue that Argentina didn't have the greatest squads.
No,
you look at we joked about Montiel not being a first choice right back at Sevilla.
Yeah.
Same with Acuña. He's not getting a regular game this year at Sevilla. Petzela isn't getting a regular game at Betis.
Yeah.
So it's there's other, you know, there are players. I mean, who'd have thought Alexis McAllister would be as good as he was? I mean, he was incredible. Absolutely just what Argentina needed. You know, Argentina had this framework of, okay, we know what Messi can do and he can't do, and we're going to work around that. By and large, that's what they did. So they got the hardest working striker they could in Alvarez, who was sensational. I mean, it's going to be tough on him when he goes back. I mean, he's going to be quite happy the fact that Haaland can do the carry the load for the next few weeks. But Pep's got an issue where he's thinking, well, I didn't realise he was that good. where are we going to get him in the team? Because his work rate alongside Messi was off the scale. Absolutely fantastic player he is. It's brought out some unlikely new superstars, the World Cup. And obviously, we're grateful that the obvious superstars really stood up and gave us a glorious final.
On that subject then, team. So team of the tournament, if you want to join in, send us it on Twitter at @LaLiga_weekly, I think it is, at Driscoll FC, at Terry Gibson 88. So some of the Patreons have sent theirs through. I'm going to check them out and then you can comment on the names as you want to. So Tapiwa has come up with his. Livakovic, the Croatia goalkeeper. Now, in the end, I think I've gone with Emi Martinez just because he won the final, I think, in the end. I think
despite that celebration with his golden glove. Seriously, what's he thinking?
I mean, the guy's a bit of a nutcase.
Goalkeepers. Well, I mean, is he not thinking anyone's seen it? It's like,
But Livakovic,
give it to him. I would nearly take it off him for that.
Livakovic, like Subasic 4 years ago, basically Croatia just draw every game go all the way through the World Cup, basically, because the goalkeeper can save a load of penalties. But
Bono played well, didn't he?
Who did?
Bono.
Yeah, he did. Good World Cup. People have got him. And the other one is, because I've done a one player per country. And Szczesny, who was it, really good. But obviously Poland were boring and no one really liked watching them, but he was actually really good. So Tapiwa has got Hakimi. Everyone has got Hakimi. I think that's a universal choice. Yes. Real Madrid messed up there, didn't they, basically?
No. Oh, goodness me. How much did they sell him to Real Madrid? It wasn't a lot either, was it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I know they paid a lot more for Odriozola.
Yeah.
Get for Hakimi.
Yeah,
I believe that was Zidane's choice. I think that to let Hakimi go, and I think it was Florentino Perez's choice to bring in Odriozola because he had one good game against Real Madrid.
Yeah,
and at that time, Florentino Perez had enough power to think, I like him, I'm going to buy him, whatever the cost.
It was
that period that happened a few
30
times.
30 million for a fullback,
and then they let Hakimi go for a lot less than they paid. So that was he's always been good.
Right, controversially, he's got Otamendi in. I wouldn't have Otamendi in, to be honest, sorry, but just too many mistakes, isn't he? He's just a bit wild. Gvardiol, most people have got him in, and I think he was an obvious choice, even though he got beaten by Messi in that brilliant run.
And he was blindfolded. playing blindfolded as well, which I've always wondered about the merits of that, the player with those. It didn't impede him, but I don't know how your vision gets affected by that. I did play for a team once that someone was wearing one of those and it was only elasticated and they pulled it off the guy's face and it pinged back on his head. I won't mention the team or whatever, but he was great.
He's got Mitoma at left back. There's a lot of Brighton players pop up in this. Kovacic, Amrabat. Loads of it have gone for Amrabat.
Amrabat was
excellent, wasn't he?
I must admit, when the tournament started, I thought, is he still playing, Nordin Amrabat? Is he his younger brother?
Yeah, so there's the emerging player in the World Cup. I think probably him, isn't it?
Did the silly kickoff?
I don't know. I don't.
Barcelona.
I don't know if they're. If they're related.
He chased the ball. They are related.
Oh, are they? Right, okay. Right.
His brother. Do you remember the kickoff at Barcelona? There was a silly kickoff. Something happened. I'm going to look it up. In the next podcast, where someone went and dribbled the ball from kickoff without anyone else.
That was him. Yeah, he dribbled the ball, didn't he? That was it. He dribbled it.
And Luis Suarez went to close him down, and then suddenly stopped and thought, hang on, he's had three touches.
Yeah, you can't do that. He's obviously thinking, you know what, I've hit upon a tactic here. no one's ever thought of that before.
Sofian Amrabat was fantastic.
Yeah. Griezmann's tournament, Terry. Say a bit about that. He's in quite a few people's teams.
And it's been a big turnaround for him, actually. Not in terms of international football, because he had that record. It was 74, 75 games consecutive now for the national team.
Yeah,
but he finds his best position. He finds a role in the French team, a responsibility, which he's gradually getting again at Atletico, and they've got to utilise that and make more of that and play him in that position he plays for France, which is it's kind of like a midfield attacking midfield player, but he has that intelligence to know when to make the front three and to drop back into a midfield three. When to play in between the two, when to go and close down, when to drop off, when to help out defensively. It's almost like having a 12th man sometimes because of the different functions he fulfills during the game in that position. When you play him out wide and you play him up front, it can nullify him a little bit. But I think his position under Deschamps is always so suited him, and he's always shown great form for France, but he was excellent. His delivery as well, set pieces, crosses from wide. He was excellent this tournament.
So the rest of Tapia's team is Mbappe, Alvarez, Messi. Discussed them all already. Stu says, amazing World Cup, amazing groups, amazing knockout games, amazing final for me, amazing way for Messi to cap off his career. Shame about the location and the background that will tarnish things from a non-football perspective. Well put, I think. Here's my team. Emi Martinez. Last minute saves for the Dutch and France. I mean, he did make good saves as well, didn't he? Yeah, shootout saves. Romero, big old Spurs defender, knocking people around. He's got that little bit, you know, England winning the fair play award. You're not going to win a fair play award with him, are you? But they won the World Cup there, didn't they? Gvardiol Saiz.
He still thinks the old tackle from behind is allowed. In every game he does one where he goes right through the back of the centre forward and puts his hands up as if saying, what's wrong with that? No, you're not allowed to do that anymore. Yeah. He's your classic Argentine centre-back.
So Stu's got Saiz in, which I sort of would, but I think he played on... It annoyed me that he played in the France game because he was clearly injured. The whole, I'm a warrior kind of stuff. Just been outpaced by Olivier Giroud.
I think the Morocco defence was all about the collective rather than...
Yeah.
I mean, we the quality of Hakimi.
Individual
performance. But his was also... He stood out because going forward as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, he stood out because when you're looking at the centre backs, El Yamik, the substitute centre back at Valladolid, played well for Morocco. So it does bring out unlikely heroes and characters in the World Cup, but their defending was a collective, protected by Amrabat ahead of them as well. And Onua was it, the other one as well in midfield? He was superb, work rate, organisation. So I think I'd be hard pressed to actually pick one of the Moroccan defenders just based on. Defending. It was a collective. So it was a good goalkeeping performance as well.
Hakimi, Amrabat, funnily enough. Fernandez, who won the Young Player Award, was really good as well, wasn't he, over Argentina?
Yeah.
Teo Hernandez. Now, Stu, I wouldn't have Teo Hernandez in.
No.
He's wild. Yes. And he's got see his qualities as an attacking player, but some of his defence, you think, mate, calm down a bit when you
exactly. You
know, do your job properly. So it's our old exactly.
So left back, I'll put some thought into this.
Yeah. So Griezmann, Messi, Mbappe. Intrigued to see your team suffered. Can't think of a left. Loads of people like this can't think of left backs. He gives a few honourable mentions: Bono, Varane, Modric, Unai, Giroud. And Rodrigo De Paul, he's awful at the start, but became vital for Argentina, which is, another Atletico player.
Argentina, isn't this, it's more often than not the case where, I mean, Spain won after losing to Switzerland. The teams that do eventually win it do improve as the tournament starts, don't they? And then you always see a team like Brazil who perform brilliantly, and it's not always Brazil, but a team that performed brilliantly, and then lose it's so precarious, the World Cup. You can play brilliantly and everyone puts you up as favourites, and in the next game you're out.
Yeah.
And you do often find, and Rodrigo De Paul, I agree, I think, by the end of the tournament, he got criticised early on, but by the end of the tournament, was a really important player for Argentina. Surprised when he came off relatively early yesterday as well. It might have been an extra time, but...
Brazil, by the way, the most brainless bit of play, honestly, to concede that goal. With all those players up the pitch when they got knocked out, unbelievable for a team that again, like Spain, could have beaten both teams in yesterday's final, couldn't they? But they didn't get there because they were ludicrous. Right, Kelvin's team is a bit of a Brighton theme. Martinez in goal, Hakimi, Romero, Gvardiol, Estupinian, McAllister, Bellingham. I think he's the only England player that's popping up in people's teams. Griezmann,
in the conversation,
Messi, Mbappe, Alvarez. And there
Tchouaméni had a good World Cup.
He
had a really good World Cup, and you forget how young he is as well. I'll go through it and come up with it. I don't think it'd be much different to what most people were saying there. I think left back's up for grabs, isn't it?
Yeah,
maybe
I think
a centre back is up for grabs.
Yeah, and well, again, there's a missing centre back, isn't there? I think Gvardiol is a clear choice. Because Konate, I think when he was on for France, he didn't make a mistake, but he didn't play him that much. So it's an awkward one as to whether you pick someone who the manager doesn't see as first choice, but actually, I think we're probably better with him on, not smashing into people and
clearing surprised
around.
Describes Upamecano. I was surprised with how wayward his defending was in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Just crashing into people and knocking people over. I'm surprised at that as well, to be honest.
Yeah, that Bundesliga defending, Terry. It's like, that sort of suicidally high line. But, you get away with it with Bayern Munich. But I think, almost got away with it with France. I've got to give Henry's thoughts. Because we've enjoyed the World Cup, but Henry has been annoyed by it, essentially. My World Cup thought, it's going to seem like a rant. It's easy to forget everything around this.
I like a rant.
Yeah. For me, it was the worst World Cup in my lifetime. Now, some of the football was good. Never had any doubt it would be. It's World Cup, but I couldn't see past everything surrounding the tournament. Absolutely everything was wrong, all of which had been well documented. The final was phenomenal, but it's quite annoying that they have this memorable game to pin against it. It felt manufactured from the start. They do everything possible to get Ronaldo and Messi as far as possible right from the start, with Ronaldo's first penalty followed by four given to Argentina and allowing Martinez to throw the ball away in the shooter unpunished. The standard of refereeing was abysmal and raised questions. 2018 refereeing was great, to the point where I thought everything was being done to ensure Argentina progress, and I'm far from a conspiracy theorist. The sports washing continued to the very end with the rope stunt. It really was a professional job by the hosts. I'm glad it's all over, something I've never said about a World Cup. As for me, they are the pinnacle. Highlights were Morocco bringing joy and making history and ending in Spain's group. Was great drama, but good riddance to the tournament. Sorry to bring the mood down.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
I take your point, but for me, I shrugged it all off. I shrugged the negative side off. And I said this at the beginning. In a sense, the corruption that meant the World Cup went to Qatar and everything that's wrong with how Qatar runs its own country, I mean, I've got no argument with it, except that I don't want that to ruin the World Cup, because you only get so many World Cups. I think I've had 13 World Cups in my lifetime. I don't know how many more you'll have. So I was determined for it not to let it ruin the World Cup. So I watched the World Cup and I enjoyed it. And like I said at the beginning, has it? Nothing would have changed anyway. The World, you're missing the point. I think if you think the World Cup is going to change the world of politics, I don't think it
doesn't.
Is. I think they told us it was going to. They told us, oh, we'll give it to Qatar, and all these things will get better. No, they won't. No. It was never going to. It was a cynical move to put it there, and I'm just determined not to have it ruined.
Yeah, I've said my piece about different cultures around the world, but the corruption is the one that hacked me off from the start. When you see the evidence of Russia and Qatar getting the World Cup, and being in the winter, I haven't. It's kind of been okay. It's different, but I wonder what it's going to do to the domestic campaigns.
It'll be interesting come the end of the domestic campaign, wouldn't it? But having said that, if it chucks that up in the air, and generally the best teams have got the players who've been to the World Cup, and they've got enough going for them. They're not going to get any sympathy from me, the big clubs, I don't think, for that.
And it's hard for us. I mean, I've enjoyed the football. And I've just kind of got ignored where it was in the end. I know it's not the right thing to do, but what can we do? I mean, I just want to, as you say, just enjoy the World Cup finals, and I've enjoyed the football. And you know, there's only so much we can do. I didn't want to deprive myself of watching a World Cup final, a competition.
And I haven't. Henry's points about the dodgy pens. I'm not convinced. I saw.
Yeah, no, I think the referee hasn't refereeing. Actually, it's been glossed over by the fact the referee was so good in the final.
Yeah.
I thought he was excellent in the final. We didn't have VAR stoppages. We didn't have delays. We didn't have the players. The players sort of went along with his style of refereeing and the fact that the game flowed.
Yeah.
You know, and he was in charge of the game. It's one of the best refereeing performances I've seen for a long, long time. Now, we can argue over some of the other games where the referees that are not as good get games in the group stages and stuff like that. We have time to reflect on the World Cup as a whole. I'm sure there's some poor refereeing. Martina Hoz held up the flag for La Liga, particularly where he obviously didn't referee an England game. I don't think there was any corruption in terms of making sure that certain teams' players went through to whatever stage they could. But I get the anti-feeling towards the World Cup being where it was at this time of the year. I do understand it, but as you said, like you, I just shrugged it off where it was, and there's nothing I can do. Sitting in my house in Essex watching the World Cup on telly, and there's no protest I make that can make any difference, and that's the same for everybody else. And some of the smugness though that from the pundits and that has wound me up, I have to be honest. I've become quite good at this World Cup and switching off punditry at half time at the end of the game, and I'm just watching the football. So any opinions I'm making on this World Cup are pretty much my own, to be honest, because you can't they give with one end and take with the other.
I haven't heard.
I'd like some new faces on punditry as well, if I'm being honest.
A bit of recycling.
We get to see the
on.
Same ones. Working on different channels all through the year, and then they are again in the World Cup.
Especially because some of them don't say a lot anyway. They don't give you a lot of analysis, do they?
They're out there saying, oh, it's so bad, it's so hard, and there they are doing this and doing that, getting paid this and getting paid that, and you just think, oh, come on.
Jürgen Klinsmann's there with his random opinions on hang on, it's literally the opposite of what you said in the last break, mate.
But I think in general it's been a memorable World Cup. Yeah, I really do. And I topped off by the final. The final was just I texted you after a beautiful mess. It was a beautiful mess, and that's how, you know, we love to see games that have end to end, that are open, that are a mess, sometimes so chaotic.
Yeah.
I mean, 2-0 up, time running out, no hope of a comeback. I always know, when it's 2-0, I'm always there listening to commentators on this game. And it's quite easy to make that conclusion in a game like yesterday, where there was no sign of France coming back, but all it takes is that one mistake, that split second, that one moment of magic, and you're back in it. And then again, when Messi gets the third to make them 3-2, you're thinking, no, this isn't done yet. There's time left in this. And that's the beauty of football. And to have that game in a World Cup final where the stakes were so high is unusual. We don't get that in finals normally. And it was topped off a really good World Cup and made it into a sensational World Cup.
Right. And we're back with La Liga, Terry.
Yep.
As ever, La Liga scheduling is an act of genius. So technically, our next podcast should be New Year's Day, but we'll see about that, shall we? Because the round finishes on New Year's Eve, doesn't it? The next round that's coming back. So we'll be back with La Liga. And so if you want to join in, patreon.com/LTEL, that would be lovely if you did that. Thank you to the Patreons for your support, and thank you to everybody else. And thank you to everybody who got in touch, and we'll see you for some La Liga podcasting soon.